Today we're beginning on text 46, page 87, description of the presiding deity of Haridam, Lord Vishnu. Diparchareva hi dashantaram abhyupetya, dipayate virvitta hetu samana dharma, yastadri gevahi cha vishnu taya vibhati, govindamari purusham tamaham vajami. The light of one candle being communicated to other candles, although it burns separately in them, is the same in its quality. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who exhibits himself equally in the same mobile manner in his various manifestations. Purport. So, in other words, Brahma is using an analogy here to try to understand something about the nature of the Lord and his expansions, that he expands himself and transmits his power to other expansions, the Chaturvyuha expansions, Purushavatars, etc., and that the light of them or their spiritual potency burns the same intensity, but it may have some variation also. Just like the light of one candle appears to be the light of the same intensity as the light of another candle. So they're showing that much, but then Krishna can show so much more. The presiding deities of Haridam, namely Hari, Narayan, Vishnu, who are the subjective portions of Krishna, are being described. The majestic aspect of Krishna is Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha, whose subjective portion is Karana Dakshai Vishnu, the prime cause, whose portion is Garbhadakshai Vishnu. So, in other words, Lord Narayan expands into Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu expands into Garbhadakshai Vishnu. Shirodakshayi is again the expansion or subjective portion of Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. The word Vishnu indicates that the Lord is all-pervading, omnipresent and omniscient personality. In other words, he's everywhere to be found and he knows everything. In this shloka, the activities of the subjective portions of the divinity are enunciated by the specification of the nature of Shirodakshayi Vishnu. In other words, these Purushavatars are being described. This verse is actually describing Shirodakshayi Vishnu, who embodies or exhibits the qualities of the other Purushavatars. The personality of Vishnu, the embodied form of the manifestive quality, Sattvagun, is quite distinct from that of Shambhu, who is adulterated with mundane qualities. So, the Vishnu principle is the descent of Sattvagun. It's quite different from the Shambhu principle, who is mixed with the qualities of passion and ignorance. Because previously, text 45, we discussed Shambhu, so now we try to understand the difference between Lord Shiva and Shiva Tattva, and Vishnu Tattva. Both meaning Lord Vishnu and Govinda, consist of the unadulterated substantive principle. In other words, Govinda, the Supreme Lord, and his expansions are all embodiments of pure spiritual energy. Vishnu, in the form of the manifest causal principle, is identical with Govinda as regards quality. The manifestive quality, Sattvagun, that is found to exist in the triple mundane quality is an adulterated entity. In other words, Sattvagun in the material world is not pure. There's no such thing as pure goodness in the material world, but Vishnu himself is the embodiment of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. That's what that says. Brahma is the dislocated portion of the divinity manifested in the principle of mundane action, endowed with the functional nature of his subjective portion. So in other words, Brahma appears in the mode of passion, and he is a separated portion. He's not a plenary portion. In other words, he's not a full manifestation of Vishnu Tattva or spiritual reality. He's a separated, what Sanskrit is called Bivinamsha. Means Amsha means part, and Bivina means separated. Or what we hear, it says dislocated portion. It doesn't mean he broke his arm. It's like when you fall off your bicycle, you break your arm. You get dislocation. Or let's say you dislocate. Sometimes that term is there. You dislocated your joint. So Brahma is not a broken arm of Vishnu. Maybe, but you could look at it that way. But that's the language. A dislocated portion means, that's the English for Vivinamsha. So he's endowed with the functional nature of a subjective portion. So that's Brahma, the difference between Brahma and Vishnu. Now Shambhu in the purport. And Shambhu is a dislocated portion of the divinity manifested in the principle of mundane inertia, possessing similarly the functional nature of his subjective portion. In other words, Shambhu appears in the mode of ignorance, and he's also a separated portion of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and possesses a portion of his energy. The reason for there being dislocated portions is that the two principles of mundane action and inertia, being altogether wanting in the spiritual essence, any entities that are manifested in them, are located at a great distance from the divinity himself or his facsimiles. In other words, Brahma and Shiva or Shambhu, they're separated portions of Lord Vishnu because Maya has removed them from pure spiritual energy. So, the Brahma and Shambhu in this material world, they appear in these modes, and they're also not fully purified to exhibit all the qualities of Vishnu. So they're at a distance. Now, more interesting English here. Although the mundane manifestive quality is of the adulterated kind, Vishnu, the manifestation of the divinity, in the mundane manifestive quality, makes his appearance in the unadulterated manifestive principle, which is the constituent of the mundane manifestive quality. Hence, Vishnu is the full subjective portion and belongs to the category of the superior Ishvaras. He is the Lord of the deluding potency and not alloyed with her. So the paragraph beginning with, although the mundane manifests of quality, and then it's not unalloyed with her. Despite the sattva-gun of Maya, which is actually mixed with the other modes of nature, we're on page 88, verse 46. Towards the bottom, there's a word that says, although. Although the mundane manifests of quality. So this is a second translation. Despite the fact that the sattva-gun, or the mode of goodness of Maya, or the material world, being mixed with other gunas, qualities of passion, ignorance, the guna avatar makes his appearance only in the unalloyed portion of sattva-gun. Because they say that Lord Vishnu, he's in sattva-gun. Well, he's in the unalloyed, he's in the unmixed sattva-gun. Because the sattva-gun of this world, there's no such thing as someone, he's very sattvic. No, he does yoga every day. And he only eats, he's a fruitarian. He's very sattvic. There's no question of someone being very sattvic. There may be some sattvic and very sattvic, but they'll also be very rajasic and very tamasic also. They also sleep, and they also sometimes, fall down from a yoga practice. You ever hear of one big yogi? He was also yogi, vegetarian, TM. He was studying TM, everything. His name was Vishwamrita Muni. But he also became very passionate. And although everyone said, oh, he's a big yogi. He's meditating so much. You can do all these postures and everything. So he's a big yogi. But then when a little tiny lady came from, Nanda Kanana, and just went jing, 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 jing. And then he was like, wow, wow, wow. You know? he forgot all about his sattva gun and got a little bit racy, as they say, you know, a little bit, you know, surcharged with passion. So this is the nature of the material world. So Vishnu doesn't appear. He appears in that Vishuddha sattva aspect of goodness. This is what is being said there. It says, the manifestation of divinity in the mundane manifested quality makes its appearance in the unadulterated manifested principle. That means that Vishnu, he comes to the material world in goodness, but in that portion of the goodness which is totally transcendental. So Lord Vishnu makes his appearance only in the unalloyed or unmixed pure aspect of sattva-gun, the portion of completely pure transcendental existence. Thus Vishnu is the full plenary portion or expansion, Swamshavilas, and the all-powerful entity, Maheshwara Tattva. Vishnu is not connected with Maya, yet he is the master of Maya. So, he is the lord of the deluding potency and is not alloyed with her. You see? He's the master of Maya and he's not mixed up with her. Go on with the purport. Vishnu is the agent of Govinda's own subjective nature in the form of the prime cause. In other words, Govinda, one of his expansions in Chaturvyuha, then the Purushavatars. So as Vishnu, Govinda is the cause of all these expansions. That's why sometimes you'll read in Shastras that says that Krishna is the seventh avatar of Vishnu or something like this. You see these phrases. Or because what's described is the different avatars. So this is what we talked about already in previous class. This is a review. But the avatars that enter this material world, they come through Vishnu, specifically Shiradakshaya Vishnu. So some Indologists and so-called professors of Indian philosophy, they will make definitions in dictionaries and say Krishna is the seventh avatar of Vishnu, not understanding his Swayam Tattva, Swayam Bhagavan Tattva. So that what's explained is just like the analogy I use is that door, we all enter this room through that door. Say there's one door, that door doesn't exist. There's one door into this room. So we all enter the door, we all enter this room through that door. So we can say, one way of looking at it is say, well, you know, we depend on that door. We come through that door to enter this room. So that's how the various avatars, they enter through Shiradakshaya Vishnu. So it appears that they're coming through Vishnu. But they, you know, it's like, wait a minute, I didn't come through this door. I exist, on the other side of this door, I already existed. I have my own place and my own leelas and my own friends. But if you only see me from the point of entry into this room, then you'll say, oh, where did he come from? Where did you come from? Oh, it came through the door, right? Like I said, like this, from someone comes, oh, where did he come from? Oh, if you're just in this room, you'll say, oh, he came through the door. There he is, he came through the door. But you say, where did you came from? No, I came from Holland. Oh, I don't know, it looks like he came through the door. You know, so, like Krishna comes, he's not an avatar. Krishna is not an avatar of Vishnu, but he enters into this material world through Vishnu, because Vishnu is in charge of the material world, the three forms of Vishnu, which, three aspects of one Vishnu, basically, which we already discussed. So that's what is saying here. Vishnu is the cause of all expansions, but actually that's Govinda's expansion to begin with. Now on the page 89. All the majestic attributes of Govinda, aggregating 60 in number, are fully present in his majestic manifestation, Narayan. In other words, all 60 of Govinda's qualities, which are listed in Nectar Devotion, there are 64, but 60 of those are present in Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, but not in quite the depth of Krishna. Brahma and Shiva are entities adulterated with mundane qualities. It means they're polluted, they're adulterated, they're polluted or contaminated or mixed with different material or mundane qualities. But Vishnu is not. Though Vishnu is also divine appearance in mundane quality, Gunavatar. In other words, he's transcendental. Vishuddhasattva, but he appears in goodness. Brahma and Shiva appear in passion ignorance, but they're not transcendental. Still, he is not adulterated or mixed with the three modes of the material world. The appearance of Narayan in the form of Mahavishnu, the appearance of Mahavishnu in the form of Garbhodakshai Vishnu, and the appearance of Vishnu in the form of Shiradakshai are examples of the ubiquitous function of the divinity. In other words, they exemplify the dynamic nature of the Absolute Truth. In case you couldn't... They are examples. It means they exemplify the dynamic nature of Krishna, that he has all these expansions. Vishnu is Godhead himself, and the other two gunavatars, Brahma and Shiva, and all the other demigods are entities possessing authority and subordination to Vishnu. From the subjective manifestation of the Supreme Self-Luminous Govinda, it's really beautiful language, actually. From the subjective majestic manifestation of the Supreme Self-Luminous Govinda emanate Karanadakshai, Garbhadakshai, and Shirodakshai, and all other derivative subjective divine descents, avatars, such as Ram, this is what I already mentioned, analogous to communicated light appearing in different candles shining by the operation of the spiritual potency of Govinda. Krishna's Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he defines the concept of eloquence. Eloquence means, he defines it very eloquently also, which is interesting. The meaning of eloquence is essential truth spoken concisely. That's a very concise and eloquent definition of the word eloquence. Essential truth spoken concisely. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his purports here are certainly beautiful gems of transcendental eloquence. This last sentence, which is one sentence, beginning with "from the subjective manifestation," I have another rendering of that. Govinda is the original or supreme, quote, lamp. From his Vilasmurti, which means plenary forms possessing basically identical potencies, all the swamshas, or plenary descents of Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, Shiradakshai Vishnu, Ram, etc., shine as radiantly as individual lamps in their respective locations by the transcendental potency of Govinda. Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami has a very interesting statement in this regard, because the analogy of this verse is all about a candle, right? One candle is lit. There's one original candle which is lit, and all other candles are there. They have wax and wick, but they have no potency until they're ignited. So then they're lying dormant. They have to be empowered. They need that shakti. They need that light. So then Vishnu lights them. He expands his potency into them, and then they exhibit light. So that's his different expansions, or expansions of his potency. So now he explains it like this. This analogy of a candle refers to different forms and expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose quality or flame is the same. So the qualities, as we heard, Lord Narayan or Vishnu, and these three Vishnu expansions, Shiradakshai, Garbhadakshai, Mahavishnu. But Shiva, due to controlling the mode of ignorance, is compared to the soot, which is a byproduct of these candles. Very interesting. Not to diminish or to denigrate the position of Lord Shiva, but it's partly humorous. There's some humor there, but also it's right in some extent. If you have a candle, when a candle burns, it will create smoke, and the smoke will make the rooftop or the ceiling black. So that black stuff on the ceiling is called soot, S-O-O-T, soot, soot or soot, soot. And so Lord Shiva, he's compared, and he's an emanation from the flame, but became a little blackish, not so brilliant, because of his contact with the black mode of ignorance. So he's compared to the soot of those candles. It's an interesting idea that Jiva Goswami gives in his commentary. So here, of course, in this verse, this is one of those technical verses which, of course, this is the age of technology. It's supposed to be so, everyone's very information technology, computer, everyone, technology is the way of life now. It's the way of making living. Everything is technology. But when we get into spiritual technology, everybody goes to sleep. But when we get into computer technology, everybody's like, you know, full on 100% wide open. You know, hands, eyes, you know, it's like feet, knees, everything's into it. You know, pressing the buttons, and their eyes are blooming with ecstatic symptoms of attraction to the computer screen. And they can stay wide awake for 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours, 56 hours, no sleep. But as soon as you open the Brahma Samhita and talk about spiritual technology, where's all your technology brain, Baba? You know, you know so much about computers, this program, that program, Fox and Pro and this and that, and micro hard and soft and, you know, flexible. But when it comes to the technology of Krishna, this is called Krishna Sambandha technology. The technology of the identity of Krishna, the identity of this world and the jiva. Then it's like, hey, look, man, hey, this is boring. This is, I don't want to hear this. Just tell me Krishna Leela. So, we have engaged sometimes in such activities of discussing the pastimes of the Lord by the mercy of our guru and well-wishers. And sometimes books are there describing those things. But nevertheless, we also understand the principle of evolution of consciousness. This book, Rama Samhita, is discussing the evolution of consciousness also. And by explaining creation and the different tattvas and shaktis of the Lord, people, devotees, especially in this age, in this 21st century, everyone's very keen. They want to know about the gopis and the rasa-filled vilas, pastimes of the Lord and his consorts. So who are the gopis? Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitavis. They're shaktis. They're shaktis of the Lord. They're potencies of the Lord. Ladini Shakti, Ananda Shakti. The bliss potency, the potency of love and divine ecstasy. That is the gopis. So they are shaktis. But that they are the topmost expression of Krishna's divine energy. They are the, if you want to know what is the heart of Krishna, if you want to see the inside of Krishna's heart and perceive what are his feelings, the feelings of God, what are his, the heartmost, the inner core of the heart of God, the inner core of his heart is full of shakti. And the inner core of his heart is, when he expands that inner core of his heart, that Ladini Shakti, it comes out as Srimati Radharani and her Kaya Vyuha expansions of the Ashta Sakis and the other Sakis. And they're all Shaktis. They're all Shakti. They're all potencies, energies of the Lord. And they're the most exalted, topmost energies of the Lord. And discussing Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma and the Vishnu, they're also energies of the Lord, energies and energetic forms of the Lord. And it is impossible, it is actually impossible to understand or perceive the non-perceptible transcendental exchanges between Shaktiman Sri Krishna and Shaktimayi Srimati Radharani and the gopis without understanding the other shaktis. Like when you approach someone, you don't approach them by jumping inside their heart. Oh, hello, Mr. You know, hello, you know, so and so. I'm very attracted to you. I want to go right into your heart and find out all the secret feelings and hidden emotions of your heart. It takes time. We have an expression. It takes time to know someone, to understand someone, and maybe you'll never understand some people. So we approach the person first from the eyes. We get some general observation from a distance, right? Interesting form. Interesting form. So So in the same way, we look at the absolute truth from a distance of Shraddha, very distant faith. Oh, the absolute truth? Interesting idea. Interesting. There is an absolute truth? Acha? Beyond the relativity? Beyond this relative world? Interesting. I'll look into it. Maybe I'll read up on it, something about that. Oh, you have a book about it, Beyond Birth and Death. Ooh, it's a rather frightening title. Why don't you have something a little more... Okay, yeah, how about Higher Taste? This is a cookbook. Oh, yeah, that's good. But there's a little bit of absolute truth there. Yeah, that I can look from this perspective. I can examine the absolute. So in this way, we begin our approach to God from a very far distant perspective. And gradually, we will come to know the energies of the Lord. And you have to get through, and you have to understand and perceive and realize and surrender and be blessed by all the different energies of the Lord before you're going to receive the blessing and access to the internal energy of the Lord. Until we understand the external energies and all the different potencies of the Lord, there's no way you're going to storm the gates of heaven, as they say. The gates of heaven. You can't come in with a battering ram and say, wait a minute, see this? I'm coming through. And you come right into Krishna's heart. Never happened in a million lifetimes. You can pretend and you can just say, no, I only want the egg. I don't want to feed the chicken, you know? Like that philosophy, half a hen philosophy. Oh, the egg is, you know, whatever, but, you know, that part maybe people like. So they don't want to feed. So we maybe want the topmost thing, we want the internal energies of the Lord. We want the pleasure and wonderful transcendental emotional exchanges of the gopis. But Krishna will never give that without... So that's why it's sambandha, abhideya. Sambandha means to learn about all these energies. And abhideya means to serve them. And prayojana means by serving all these energies of the Lord in a systematic way through parampara, then one will be blessed by all these shaktis of the Lord, which are actually Krishna's expansions, and then one will be given access. One will receive the ultimate blessing of shakti. The ultimate blessing of shakti is the descent of Swarup Shakti, Krishna's personal energy. Swarup Shakti means Samvit Shakti, Ladini Shakti. He will say, okay, I'm very happy with your studies, I'm very happy with your submission, I'm very happy with your service. After so many hundreds and thousands of lifetimes, now I will open my heart. I'll open my heart and my love light will shine on you, as they say. My love light means my Swarup Shakti will shine on your heart and mine, and you will become fully illuminated with all knowledge and transcendental ecstasy. Then you can understand the mind and heart of my Srimati Radharani, because she is also Swarup Shakti Mai. She is the form of my Swarup Shakti. So we may consider this class irrelevant or dry, but actually it is of primary importance and necessity. Maybe not this class, but that's a little bit presumptuous and tinged with ego. But we can say this book, Brahma Samhita, it is extremely important to study and to realize and to serve. Taking guidance from Jiva Goswami's commentaries and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's commentaries and any other understandings and teachings you can receive and your own studies, it will be very, very helpful to approach the goal of life and attain that special gift that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give. Unat ujvala rasa swabhakti shriyam. Swabhakti shriyam. That bhakti shriyam is bhakti shakti. Unat ujvala ras. We want that, but we don't want to pay the price. Surrender, service for one life, for two lives, for three lives. Isn't there some like quick way or some fast way, you know, fast? 300 megahertz, you know, 600 megahertz, you know, Pentium, you know, something fast. Yeah, fast as you can surrender. That's as fast as you get it. So you can surrender in 1 minute, fine. But usually that's not the tradition.
So this verse, of course, is discussing this plenary aspects of the Lord, Swam Shavatars, Vivinam Shavatars. So we looked in Rupa Goswami's Lago Bhagavatamrita. And Lago Bhagavatamrita gives a very brief and succinct philosophical summary of the major points of our philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. It's a very small book, but a very, very wonderful book by Rupa Goswami. It's small but big and light but heavy. He calls it Lagu. Lagu means light, because his brother, elder brother, wrote the heavy book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So he wanted to show his humility before his Shiksha Guru and beloved brother. Although in terms of Ras, and in terms of, you can say, you know, their bhajan at this level, Rupa Goswami was empowered to reveal much more the intimate aspects of bhajan and higher aspects of bhav and prema than what apparently Sanatana Goswami, because Sanatana Goswami is Sambandhacharya and Rupa Goswami is Abhideyacharya. Although it's one tattva, so it's not that one's better than the other, because they're both manjaris, Rupa Manjari and Labhanga Manjari. And when you see Sanatana Goswami, when he's writing in his Vaishnav Toshini commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, he reveals so many wonderful things from his perspective of Manjari Vilochan, from the eyes of a Manjari. So he explains the different aspects of the Lord. So I've just, this is pretty technical, but the original form of the Lord is Swayamrup Krishna. He is the eternal supreme form of Krishna, and he's independent of any other form. Then Krishna expands himself into forms which are called Prakash, sometimes Prakash Avatar or Prakash Rup. So there's Swayam Rup, Krishna, then he expands in Prakash Rup. So what is Prakash Rup? He explains. These forms, Prakash Rup, cannot be considered as different from the Lord, since they do not differ in any respect from the Lord's intrinsic form, which means, essential form or his inherent form. For example, when one form of the Lord appears similar in many places, showing the same rupa, guna, and lila, that form is called Prakash Rup. So, can anyone think of examples of Prakash Rup? Yes, this is one example. When Krishna was in Dwarka, he had 16,108 palaces. And when Narada Muni went there, he went very quickly from palace to palace. And every palace he saw a form of Krishna. And every form was exactly quality, guna, and rupam, and lila the same. They're all having some lilas with their queens. Although different lilas, but they're exhibiting the same guna, rupam, and lila. But there were thousands and thousands of them. So they're called Prakash avatars, so Prakash Rup. What's another example? Ras Lila. Now in Ras Lila, can you explain something? Now we talked about Swayam Rup and we talked about Prakash Rup. So can you penetrate that a little more and tell us about Ras Lila? So in Ras Lila, as Prabhu is saying, Ras Lila Krishna expanded. He has a Swayam Rup form. He expanded himself to be with all the gopis, right? And looks just like Krishna. You see the painting. Oh, look at all those Krishnas. All the same qualities, guna, same rupam, same pastime, lila, same, all dancing. Is there anything more that can be said about that, Ras Lila? At the Ras Lila, Krishna exhibited two of his aspects. One aspect is Prakash Rupam, which he expanded with all the gopis with dancing, holding hands. But there was another form of Krishna called Swayam Rup, the original form of Krishna, which is one, was standing by the side of Jai Jai Shri Radhe. So he can expand himself to satisfy and to receive service and to give service and please all the gopis. But there's one gopi that will never settle for an expanded form. She She wants the original. Now, I have an expression in America that says, often imitated but never duplicated. Or something like that. Is that what it is? Often imitated but never duplicated. So in other words, you have the original type of thing and people like imitate it and put Sony on it and, you know, it looks like Sony and they put Sony but it's made in India and when you try to make it work, it's a piece of junk. So it's often imitated but they can never duplicate. So Krishna imitates or he expands his Prakash Roop, but his Swayam Bhagavan Roop, although the Prakash Roops are the same, there's something very, very special and different in the Swayam Roop. And that's another topic.
What about the power and voice of the house?
Yes, that's also there. Those are Prakash Roops. And then also in the same with Sakyaras, because you're bringing us into Sakyaras, when Krishna sat in Kamyavan, and so many other places too, in Bank of the Yamuna, and Ramanreti and Gokul, there's a Ramanreti and Gokul. So when you read about Ramanreti pastimes, generally when it's Sakyaras, it means Gokul. Because in Gokul there's a Ramanreti, pleasurable sands in the bank of the Yamuna. So sometimes one gets confused. Ramanreti here, there's some brief pastime where Krishna meet Radharani here before the Rasa dance. And sometimes they tell coward pastimes here. It's possible. But generally Ramanreti Sakyaras means in Gokul. So when Krishna sits in Kamyavan at Bhojantali, or Bhojan Stali, sometimes they say. And all the boys sit down. They say, well, you know, now we're sitting for lunch, and I have some really good stuff in my tiffin. I have some really good preparations. My mother, I wasn't supposed to. But I was smelling those things my mother was cooking before she offered them to our Narayan deity. I know I wasn't supposed to smell them before they're offered, but I'm only a little coward boy. And what could I do? But it really smelled good. But anyway, I hope I didn't make offense to Narayan, our family deity. So then, but he's thinking now, but so just see the difference in consciousness. And he's thinking, all those things are so nice I have in my tiffin. I've been carrying them all morning on my little backpack, like the coward boys have their little backpacks, you know, they carry their tiffins. And then, now it's time for tiffin hour. It's tiffin hour. As Prabhupada said in his Mr. Krishna book, tiffin hour. And then for Bhog, tiffin hour. So now I want to find out these things and give them to Krishna. But there's only one Krishna, there's so many boys. His heart is really some divala, some disturbance is there in his heart. And he's feeling, feeling some desperation. This is the bhav of Vrindavan, is his desperation. That the intensity of the loving exchanges between Krishna and his friends and his parents and his beloved gopis is so deep and so dynamic that it produces this transcendental desperation in the hearts of Krishna and his friends. It's not the kind of desperation that annihilates one's balance in the material world, or the desperation that creates melancholy or frustration in material exchanges, but it enhances their sweet exchange of love, because the acharyas explain that this material world, this karmasthan of the material world of birth and death, is a plane of exploitation. This is the plane. This is the atmosphere where exploitation reigns, and we exploit ourselves. By this energy, we exploit our souls, and condemn our souls to a life of slavery, to become the slave of one body after another. So that's it. We even exploit ourselves, self meaning the soul. What to speak of taking this same energy of exploitation and exploiting our so-called relatives, friends, and lovers, and then that. So basically, all exchanges in this material world are simply permeated, and you can say, contaminated with this exploitation. There's no such thing as selfless love. Everything is selfish love, self-motivated love. But in the plane of Vaikuntha, Narayan Lok, Krishna Lok, and all those thousands of Vaikuntha planets, it is considered to be the plane of dedication. Everyone is a dedicated servant. They serve the Lord with dedication in a particular sthayi bhav.
The basic sthayi bhav in there, or the permanent loving mellow, is one of servitude, dasya ras. Even there is sakya ras, and there is vatsalya ras, and there is madhurya ras, with swakiya bhav, the married queens of Vaikuntha, they are just always feeling dasosmi, dasosmi, dasosmi. And there's never ever any type of extreme exchanges that bring the servitors of the Lord in Vaikuntha to the brink of desperation or to the precipice of total transcendental anxiety. Like Prabhupada used to use this term, we should be in anxiety to serve Krishna. Remember? In the early days he said, we should be in anxiety, so therefore we keep all the temples in debt. All the temples are always in debt. They always owe money to the grocery store and or sabji market, and money to the BBT, and money to the mortgage guy, and money to the bank, and money to the car guy that owns the cars. And we got to pay the bills. They're always in anxiety. And then even in Second Avenue, the rent on the storefront was $160 a month or something. And to all the way to the, matchless gifts. And it's the last day of the month, and they don't have any money, and they spend it all on Sunday love feasts and whatever else. And it's the last day, and the rent payment's due. They don't know where it's going to come, and all the devotees in anxiety, and they're chanting your rounds in anxiety, and on kirtan, sankirtan. And then someone comes, they have a little tiny donation box. Not like nowadays, you have these huge donation boxes. But in those days, things were small is beautiful. So they had like a small donation box, and someone came in and dropped a little envelope in there. Then Ramananda, or whoever was temple present, opened up the little box just because he saw some envelope. Maybe it was an envelope from the landlord saying, tomorrow you have to leave. You're evicted tomorrow, so pack your bags. We'll be coming with the police tomorrow. He didn't know what it was. So he, took the letter out of the box. Jai, Lakshmi Narayan Ki, Jai. So there was like $165 in the box. So this kind of anxiety is not there in Vaikuntha. There's no anxiety. But the Goloka Vrindavan, Braja Gokul, is a place of this total desperation mood, where the devotees are desperate. So this coward boy is desperate. He's thinking, I have so many nice things in my tiffin box. So many nice savories, and so many luscious and delicious, creamy, tasty, buttery sweets. But how will I get a chance to like give them to Krishna? And because I want to put them in his mouth myself, because this is my love. In Vaikuntha, if you think there's any chance in Vaikuntha that some servant of Vaikuntha will walk into Narayan's dining room and say, "Hey, Lord Narayan, my wife made some great rasgullas. Here, come, let me give you one." And then go up to Lord Narayan, put it in his mouth. Impossible. Jayan Vijay Nanda Sunanda. He's got seven walls to get through, seven gatekeepers, 27, this thing, that thing, then all these queens, and all these, forget it. It's impossible. That protocol is not available there. There's a different, the Vaikuntha decorum is completely Amy Vanderbilt all the way. It's completely like, the rules. Nothing but the rules, right? And when you enter into Braja Gokul, there's no rules. There's no rules at all. On that level, the spiritual world. So, feeling desperate like that, then Krishna, he's feeling in his heart some desperate, my devotees are feeling desperate. I'm also desperate because Mother Yashoda has made a really wonderful tiffin box for me too, and I want to share my tiffin, my sweets and savories with my boyfriends. But there's only one of me. And so on the banks of the Vimala Kund or any different kund in Kamyavan, he expands himself into thousands of Prakash Rup in order to reciprocate with his loving devotees. The third expansion of glory is called Tad Ek Atma Rup. Tad Ek Atma Rup. And there's two types. Vilas Murti and Swamsha Murti. The Vilas Rup or Vilas Murti is when, by the play of Krishna's Achintya Shakti, as his inconceivable potency,
his generally similar forms appear in a different form. For example, the Vilas Murti, or you can say Tade, this is the term is Tad Ekatma Rup. The Vilas Rupam, or Vilas form of Govinda, is Narayan and Vaikuntha. So when you see Narayan and Vaikuntha, you'll think, oh, you know, he looks generally similar form, but he's actually a different form. He's also blue, and he has beautiful lotus eyes and beautiful, you know, lotus and belly and button, you know, belly, and it's so everything. Just like when Uddhava came to Uddhava Kyari, then the gopis, when they first looked, because they were so much overwhelmed in separation, they saw Uddhava and they said, "Oh, Krishna's come!" And they were totally like hallucinating. You know, because he's blue in color and he's wearing Krishna's yellow dhoti and his long hair and his beautiful features. And he said he himself has been absorbed since his babyhood in meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day and serving him. So you take on the qualities, just like you see in the West. You see these karmis, I haven't seen too many of them in a while. So fortunately, that's a good blessing for me. But I remember in Sankirtan, you see people, these Western people, and they have older people, like 55, 60 years old, and they have a little dog with them. And you look at the dog, face of the dog, you look at the man's face, and it looks about the same. It has kind of pudgy nose and funny jowls and neck, and you know, his hair is kind of like, you know, and you think, my God, this guy's been looking at his dog and meditating his dog for 15 years, and he actually has taken on the form of his dog. He looks like his dog, and surely in his next life, if that's his only little buddy, you know, his wife died or something, and he dies, you know, dog. Sometimes a guy dies, the only friend at his bedside is his dog. You know? So what will he become? So similar form, but a little different, you know, like that. So this Tade Katma Vilas Rup, they look the same, but there's obviously differences in quality. Swamsha, the Swamsha forms, is that form that has no contact with the material modes of nature, but appears in the material energy, as in the case of Vilas, there's no contact with material energy, but they're non-different from Swayamrup. But they display less power. So Narayan in Vaikuntha, he is called Tare Katma Rupa or Vilas. But then, when Narayan expands into this material world as Mahavishnu, Garbhadaksha, Vishnu, those are called Swamsha, or what we say, plenary forms, Swamsha forms. Although they're transcendental, they have no contact with the modes, but they're non-different from Swayamrup, Krishna, but they display less power. Right? They only display 60 qualities, not 64. So this includes, the Swamsha avatars includes the Purusha avatars, which I mentioned, Leela avatars like Matsya, etc. The third type of expansion, or the, you could say, one, two, three, the fourth type is called Avesh or Shakyavesh. This is when Krishna bestows or allots his particular power or potencies with another personality, in many cases a jiva. He allots his particular potencies like Vidya Shakti, Bhakti Shakti, Shristi Shakti, and he infuses or empowers a specially selected great living entity, in other words, a jiva. Example, the four Kumaras are Shakti Avesh avatars, or Avesh avatars of the Lord, with Vidya Shakti, the knowledge power. Narada Muni has Bhakti Shakti, devotional service. Brahma has Srishti Shakti, the power of creation. And Prithu has Palana Shakti. Palana means like Gopal. Palana means he was expert at maintaining the people and the whole world very happily. And Shesha Vaikuntha, Shesha is not, you know, jiva, but he's an expansion of Sankarshan. He has the Seva Shakti. He's Shesha's of Vaikuntha, but the particular power that he's exhibiting
He's considered a Shaktivesh, expansion of Sankarshan. He exhibits Seva Shakti, the power of service, and he expands himself to render so many services. As Lord Vishnu or Krishna's bed and slippers and his holy abode, his palace, his land, etc. Just like people, they want to come to Vrindavan. So they say, what's the secret? How do you come to Vrindavan? So I don't know if there's any real secret. Of course, it's great sukriti or fortune accumulated over many lives and this life by the blessings of great devotees. That's how we attain the Krita Punya Punja, or sufficient sukriti to reside and visit the holy land of Sri Vrajadam. But we can appeal to the Lord and pray to the Lord in His merciful manifestation as Balaram, because Balaram, he is the Sandini Shakti of the Lord, or one aspect, he represents the Sandini Shakti, which means the existence potency. So he provides, he expands himself and provides the holy Dham, the holy abode of the Lord. So Vrindavan Dham, the land of Vrindavan, the transcendental Chintamani, is an expansion of the Sandini Shakti of Lord Balaram. Now Balaram is a little hard to approach because he's a kind of an avadut personality, and he's pretty much busy with his own gopis and his own coward friends. And as you may know, if you ever try to approach an intoxicated person and ask them for some favors, it'll be a little hard to have a reasonable conversation with an intoxicated person. So you, hey, listen, I want to talk to you. Hey, I don't know what you're doing. So Balaram, he has a tendency to drink runi beverage, and every day at every offering, he has to have a little cup of honey. And that honey is actually is the representation of runi beverage. So just as our Lord Jagannath in Puri, the Lord of the Universe, I guess to be the Lord of the Universe requires a lot of rice, because a lot of strength, because our Lord Jagannath, he takes rice, a big pot of rice at every offering, from Mangalartik all the way on, 7 offerings a day. He likes rice too much. And other things, he has chapan bhog every day. The rice is his priya bhog. So Balaram, his priya bhog is honey, but honey means runi beverage. Runi beverage means madhupan. Madhupan means, you know, he gets intoxicated. So he gets intoxicated from Mangalartik until Shayanartik to Pradoshartik and like that. So we offer here a little bit of honey, and sometimes they sell it over here and there. And if anyone ever takes Balaram's honey, of course it's not so prescribed for brahmachari sannyasis. Honey in excess will make us a little intoxicated. But that honey, that Lord Balaram, the honey prasadam, is extraordinarily intoxicating. Because it's mixed with his adhara, Balaram adhara, adhara amrita, adhara, A-D-H-A-R-A. Adhara means the saliva or the transcendental nectar of the lips of the Lord. In this case, it's Daujadhara amrita, the nectarine saliva from the lotus lips of Balaram. And his saliva is full of intoxication. Of course, so is Krishna's, premonmad. Premonmad, it means to be intoxicated with love at the highest pitch of Mahabhav. Premonmad. So Balaram, he's intoxicated when he drinks the honey, at least afterwards. And then he sometimes very kindly leaves half a glass for others. He drinks half a glass and leaves his remnants. And that's called Mahaprasad Madhu. We call it honey, but he calls it Vruni beverage. So that's a very wonderful thing. So he's a little hard to approach. So if you want to pray to Lord Balaram, someone reads, oh, Balaram has expanded as the Brajadam. He's serving the Lord in this way. And the Brajadam being Balaram, so Balaram makes the Braj very vast and huge and impossible to cross. If Jatila is trying to run to find out where Radha and Krishna are, she'll start running. It'll take her all day. She'll get tired and go home, because she'll never get to Nikunj. But when Krishna wants to run to the Nikunj and meet with Radharani, as soon as he steps out of his house, the Nikunj is right there outside the wall. He leaves the wall of Nanda Baba's Bhavan, and he's right in the Nikunj in Radhakund or Vamshivad, Govindastali. So Balaram, he expands or contracts himself, which is Vrindavan, according to the needs and desires of his beloved brother, Shamsundar. So our prayers there will fall on deaf ears, as they say.
But Balaram is very kind. He also has within him the audarya shakti, the magnanimous potency of divine kripa or divine mercy. So he expands himself as the form of Nityananda Ram, and Sri Nityananda Ram is very merciful. Nityananda Ram expands to facilitate the pastimes of the Lord Gauranga, Radha and Krishna combined, and Gaur Leela. But Nityananda is very, very merciful. Kripa. He's very, very Nityananda Kripa. So we pray to Lord Nityananda so that if there is any secret besides the accumulation of transcendental Sukriti, if there's any secret to attaining a visit to Vrindavan or some service here or some residence here, then we can approach the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and pray, "Oh, my dear Lord Nityananda, oh Sri Nityananda Ram, please bless me that I can have darshan of Brajadam." So in this way, we find that those devotees around the world who take shelter of Nittai, they often get their desire fulfilled to have the darshan of Radha Shyam Sundar in Vrindavan. There's a small summary here of these points of this verse I want to conclude before we start verse 47 in our next meeting. This is 2 minutes. The candle analogy in this verse is a very well-known concept. There is no need to worship many gods or demigods, because simply by worshipping Krishna, that includes all the gods. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, or the original first candle. And from him, he expands into unlimited forms of expansion, incarnations, each burning with the same potency and brilliance. This verse, verse 46 of Brahma Samhita, establishes the special position of the Supreme Lord Govinda over all his expansions like Shiva and Brahma. In the material world, Krishna resides as Shirodakshai Vishnu, who is an all-pervading, omniscient personality. Shirodakshai Vishnu possesses nearly the same potency as Krishna. Although Shirodakshai Vishnu is described as the guna avatar of goodness, the various demigods serve Lord Vishnu by overseeing the mode of goodness. So he's the Lord of goodness, but he is in Leela, which we've already described, with Ramadevi. He's enjoying pastimes. He's not busy, you know, maintaining and arranging everything. That's all done by the demigods. So the various demigods, as his appointed servants, they are the Shakti Avesh from him to oversee the mode of goodness. Shirdakshaya Vishnu remains in the transcendental Shuddha Sattva with his divine loving consort Ramadevi, enjoying sweet, sweet pastimes. Shirdakshaya Vishnu is called Sattva Tanu. Tanu, or Sattva Tanu, T-A-N-U, Sattva, Sattva Tanu, means one who expands the mode of goodness or controls the mode of goodness. So Shirdakshaya Vishnu is Sattva Tanu. He controls the mode of goodness. How does he do it? Through the devatas. Brahma and Shiva, on the other hand, are not plenary expansions of the Lord, of Krishna, but they are empowered expansions, Avesh, or Shakyavesh, servants of Lord Vishnu who have contact with the material modes. Shirodakshaya Vishnu has 5 additional qualities not found in Shiva and Brahma, because this verse, 46 is about Shirodakshaya Vishnu. And we heard about the 5 qualities of Shiva in the other class. So these are the 5 qualities. He has inconceivable potency, achintya shakti. By that achintya shakti, he can enter into the atom, he can enter the heart, he can expand in unlimited forms in Vaikuntha. And by remembering him, pundrikaksha, yaksmaret, pundrikaksha, then just by remembering him, he has such power that all your sins can be destroyed in the heart. Karmani, Chakintu Nidardati Kaman. Second thing is unlimited universes are generated from his body, from the holes of his body. And he's so attractive and so beautiful that he attracts even Atmaramas, or you can say Mukta Jivas. Liberated souls are attracted.
such as Shukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras who were Brahmavadis. They gave up that conception of Suyuja to become the humble servants of the Lord. Four, Lord Vishnu, Sri Rakshai Vishnu, gives liberation to the demons he kills. And five, he's the original source of all incarnations. So that is the conclusion of verse 46.